session number 26546, reel 50.
Major Highfield, reel 15. Now, anything else about your time with 77HAA?
We had a number of senior officers, battery commanders, and that who had come into the artillery after all previous service in the Indian Army up to the partition of India in 1947, and two of the battery commanders were Peter Rain was one, and Holmes.
How did they fit in?
They fitted in very well. They didn't have the gunnery background, but they were very experienced officers, and all had seen action.
Now, what was your next? Unless there's anything else about them, you were with them from 52 to 54.
Yes.
And then your next posting was to the War Office. Now, can you tell us about this? That's 1955.
That's right. Posting was to the military training section of the War Office, and this is quite a big section. Initially, a couple of months at Chessington in huts, and then in London. And the branch that we had was called MT10. It handled all pamphlet training, and also it was in two sections. One of the sections covered the CIGS's exercise, annual exercise, which was held at Staff College each year. I was in the pamphlet section.
Now, what exactly was the pamphlet section? What was it doing?
I was amazed how slowly anything ever gets done in the War Office. War Office files travel round, and it almost seemed that if you didn't know what to do, you made a strange remark and say, passed it on to another section. And we had to deal with rifle ranges. I remember problems with one at rifle range near Gosport.
So why was it called pamphlet section? Because do you see what I mean?
Well, perhaps I was a misnomer.
The pamphlet section would suggest that you produced pamphlets.
Well, this is training of troops. It's training. And so if there were any amendments or any new things coming out, and in the CIGS's exercise that year, and the next year, they were trying to work out the theory of whether you could use atomic weapons on the forward front, on the immediate battlefield, and there was a philosophy being developed for this. Anyway, I did 2 years there, and then finally.
I'm still not quite sure what you did. Do you see what I mean? I'm sorry.
Yes. It's difficult now to quite put one's finger on this. I remember being sent to Germany to take part in their annual big exercise as an observer, and also to act as a field judge on certain occasions.
And who would you report to?
Well, I mean, there was a team was formed up, and you filled in reports and so on. I really can't
fair enough. So
elaborate on that.
Your next position was as battery commander of 54th Anti-Aircraft Regiment at Gibraltar from 57 to 58. Now, this was your turn out of a staff position.
That's right.
What do you remember of this?
Unfortunately, just about this time, my wife had become quite ill, and I had to be quite sure that I could take up this posting. She received treatment at the Middlesex Hospital for cancerous sores, and the specialist there said, yes, to go to Gibraltar's all right. Your wife can fly back in one day. When I got to Gibraltar, the regiment was in three separate batteries. One battery commanded two very large fixed emplaced guns, 9.2 inch. The second battery commanded eight 3.7 heavier Kek guns for all round and also anti-aircraft defence. And the fourth battery the third battery, which was my battery, consisted of Bofors guns, most of which were emplaced all over Gibraltar, including the highest points, and also six mobile guns, which we could deploy.
Now, do you remember the number of your battery?
It was... I can't remember.
Fair enough, no problem.
And things were still running down in this time. In point of fact, by the end, 54 ACAC regiment was dissolved after
so
2 years.
How did you like being a battery commander? I mean, you know, it's quite a senior position.
It is, but I was disappointed. The battery... one of the things you look forward to is this post, and the battery commander's vehicle is X, and you look forward to having this vehicle and having an X vehicle. When I got to Gibraltar, I discovered there was no transport in the batteries at all, and that my private A40 going to the barracks would have to be my X car. There was a pool of transport held at RHQ, so that was a big disappointment. Also, Gibraltar is only 3 miles by one, and going straight up into the air, and there were guard duties and for the commander there and the frontier, and a lot of things were routine. And when the strength of the batteries was smaller because you had no drivers. So this was a bit disappointing. I remember going into Spain on several occasions and arranging tutes for promotion exams without anything, simply working it off the map. We fired our guns about twice a year, and that was the relieving factor. An aircraft took off from the airfield, towing a sleeve, and we fired from the eastern side of the rock to try and hit this target. The regiment had run right down by the end of my 2 years. My wife, unfortunately, had got sick again and had to go back, actually, in a hospital ship. And I came back with my two children on another ship and back to the UK.
And that was in 58?
Yes.
Now, so your next and last posting, from what I can see, were from 59 to 1960, was Headquarters Southern Command at Wilton. Now, what exactly was this? You were DAA... Oh, I can't read it. QME.
QMG.
Quite, QMG. What exactly does that mean? Sorry.
Well, this is Adjutant General and Quartermaster General side of the headquarters. We had a colonel over us. But prior to that, I had filled in a couple of months, or maybe 3 months, helping to write a pamphlet for the RA branch at War Office, which was to go to all the schools in the UK for careers reasons. I quite enjoyed this, and it helped me with my wife's convalescence in London. The RA branch was very good, and we stayed 6 days in London for the week and then went out for 1 day in the country to where I'd had to put my children to a boarding school. The command, about this time, we began to hear about the fact that there was a surplus of officers and senior NCOs because so much of the anti-aircraft branch was now unnecessary due to the advent of guided missiles. And a scheme was being launched for early release from the army.
Now, hang on, you haven't actually covered the time with Staff Officer of Southern Command yet, or is are you leading up to that? Sorry, no.
This was a straightforward command duties. We had strange incidents at times. If anything went wrong in any of the barracks or something, or there was a shortage of anything, I can remember there was a Polish ship at this time that finished up in delivering some 400 or 500 people to Southampton. We had to put them into a camp, and I had to organise and get cooks there and staff and everything else. I've forgotten the name of the ship now, but there were one or two crises like these, but it was mostly a routine business.
So, now, all right, we'll go back into the story of how you decided to take early retirement.
Well, by this time, it was fairly plain to me that I couldn't accept a posting to the Far East. My wife was okay, but I made the decision that I would have to take up the scheme. And so, in due course, I left the army in January 1960 and eventually secured a job with the Marley Group of companies.
Now, were you given help to secure a posting? Because you were at a sort of slightly awkward age to start a career. You know, I mean, were you given... Did the army help?
Yes. They ran a course of about a month in Bristol for our area. And this was quite enjoyable. They gave you a certain amount of instruction, and they also arranged for visits to various factories and firms in the area so that you could get an impression of whether you might want to opt for that sort of work or try for it. I can remember I thought I could do a company secretary and asked to go and see the Fry's chocolate factory, which was close to Bristol, and see the company secretary there. I discovered when I got there it was a very small section and a very close shop as to how you got it to be a company secretary, and that was not for me. With my wife's health, I decided I would have to be a sales job of some sort. One wrote off madly to various places. I eventually got three interviews, one of which was with Schweppes, who were very good to and appreciated taking on ex-officers as their representatives. But eventually I was interviewed for the Marley Group, a branch of a company at Guildford, and succeeded in landing the job to start.
As what?
As representative.
And were you, I mean, did you find your experience of that that helped you, your army experience, your artillery experience, staff officer, helped you in being a sales representative, or?
That's a difficult question too. I think one had a pretty rounded view of the world, and you could talk to most people and not be, but it was a totally different world. The branch of Marley I joined dealt with concrete products and had several factories, one of which was at Poole in Dorset. And fortunately, they didn't have a factory in Northern Ireland, which I would not have been very pleased to go to. However, I did the training working with the teams of men on the ground, and they told me I was to specialise in the precast concrete flooring division, which was one of the factories that manufactured was at Poole. And eventually, after 3 months training, I went to Poole and was taken on there as a rep, one of two reps, working under an area manager.
And how did your career go? Did you stay with Marley? Was that your career?
I stayed with Marley until from 1960 until 1983, when the building boom which had taken place through the 60s and the 70s had petered out, and in fact the factory that the concrete factory was closed.
Were you a sales representative throughout, or did you get promotion?
I was a sales representative and then an area manager. Unfortunately, I had a heart attack when I was 50 and had 6 months out. And thereafter, I realized I wasn't going to go any further, nor did I really want to work at that sort of intensity.
Did you find you were able to... How did your acclimatization to civilian lifestyle go? I mean, did it take a long while? Or did you find difficulty in not behaving as an officer, for instance?
I think the particular service I was doing with these concrete products, with the floor beams, was in fact quite a reasonable one and didn't require a very hot cell and a lot of gas and torque. There were a whole number of independent builders and small firms and small local authorities working at that time, and I would make good contact with whoever it was, and I then promised to come there at any stage of the order, and in many cases I had eventually to go along and ask for the bill to be paid.
But what I meant was, did you find it easy to acclimatise to sort of being a civilian, or...?
Well, it was an experience, but you had, in fact, really to... You had the odd good friend, good companion, but you didn't have the teamwork that you got in the army, and you had to look after yourself.
Did you keep in touch with your old comrades, any of the old comrades' associations? Because you were eligible to join an awful lot of old comrades' associations one way or another.
I don't think they were very active at that time. They had been active in the 5 years immediately after the war, when I went to one or two divisional 50th Div reunions in York, I can remember, and also, I think, in Durham. But then it petered off. And I don't think it started to come back until somebody suddenly realised it was 40 years from D-Day. I seem to remember that impinging on me. And then in the 90s I did establish contact with Ian English and learnt about the 151 Brigade dining group, who met once a year. And as we had supported 151 Brigade through thick and thin, the artillery, the S&T, the chaplain, we were all part of the group, and I attended the dinners, which were held alternately in Durham and London for as long as they continued until the last one.
Was it important to you to see these old comrades? I mean...
At that time, it was very interesting. I remember one of the brigadiers who had taken part in Market Garden as a brigadier came to one of them, by which time I think he was 89. But to meet him and have a conversation with him and to ask questions was, in fact, very intriguing indeed.
Thank you very much.